Talks podcast, everybody. This is your host, Joe Ogden, and this week we have another interview with one of our therapists here at Freedom in Fox Point. We are here with Nina Olson.
Hello, everybody.
Nina, thank you for joining us, and especially thank you to Nina because her schedule is limited. She probably is one of our busiest therapists here at Freedom and only works part-time, so I had to schedule this way in advance. So thank you, Nina, for sitting down this morning.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Nina, tell us a little bit, just let's start with kind of your background on, you know, why you became a physical therapist, where you went to college, and then we'll get into the topic of today's podcast, talking about pelvic health and pelvic floor therapy.
Okay. All right. Well, I became a physical therapist. Gosh, this is a long time ago now, but I had my own little bout of physical therapy, like many of us physical therapists have had. And I just thought it was kind of a cool profession. I had, you know, just a little running injury when I was on the track team. And so I got to see firsthand what physical therapists did. And I thought it was super cool. And I always loved science and anatomy and problem solving. So it seemed like it was a good fit. So I actually went into school at Marquette thinking I was going to end up more in like a rehab facility, working on neuro patients. That was particularly interesting to me because I have an aunt with multiple sclerosis who always did therapy and always thought that was kind of a really nice niche. Then I went through therapy school and at Marquette, and I had one of my clinicals was in private practice, and I just absolutely fell in love with the setting and the problem solving and the quality of care. It was at a private practice in Illinois, and all of the therapists really had their own little niche and specialty, and I could really see myself working there. So I applied to Freedom, and I started here right after school, and here I am almost 20 years later.
And you've been at Fox Point since day one, right?
I have. I did a little helping out in Brookfield for a little while, but otherwise I've been here.
Is your husband from this area?
He's from Mequon.
Okay.
Yeah. So we live in Mequon now. We didn't go too far from his home, but it really checked a lot of boxes, and we just love it. We love being close to the lake and love working in Fox Point. I can zip down here pretty quickly, and it's great.
Did you think right after PT school you would end up Fox Point or the Milwaukee area, or do you think you'd go back home? Because you're originally from Rockford, right?
Right. I'm originally from Rockford, and pretty much all of my friends growing up ended up in Chicago, and I think if it wasn't for me meeting my husband, I'd probably be back in Illinois, but we ended up moving downtown Milwaukee and just love it. So can't think of being anywhere else.
And I know it's a long time ago now, but do you remember how you got in contact with Freedom originally? Like, were they hiring online or saw the job posting or knew somebody?
Right. I knew somebody, actually, and she would not mind me saying this, but my husband's aunt was a patient here, and I didn't even know they were hiring. And so when I graduated in 2003, I think I had like 7 job offers. There was not a lot of therapists, and there were a lot of jobs. So wasn't even on my radar. And then she brought it up to me, and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. So applied here and got the job, met Mike and Peter, and the rest is history.
And now I've been here ever since.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, something that, I mean, patients that have seen Nina, there's also plenty of listeners that probably have never seen Nina or have heard of pelvic health therapy. It's completely different than orthopedic outpatient physical therapy. Would you agree?
I would, you know.
Or a different subset, I should say.
It is a different subset. And, you know, but I think it is definitely related to orthopedic problems, you know. So kind of going back into my history and how I got into this pelvic floor work, it was not even something we offered at school. I think maybe we had a 20-minute snippet of a lecture that this is something that you could do. And it was mostly around using electrical stimulation to help with bladder control. So it was real, you know, now you have a whole residency that you can do in pelvic floor dysfunction. So, but I started working here and I was seeing so much spine. So we're a really spine heavy clinic, lots of low back pain, lots of neck pain. And a lot of the women I was working with in particular were telling me that their back pain and their hip problems, their neck pain, all kind of came on around the time that they had children, and their bodies went through a lot of changes. And then as I got to know them, they'd also confide in me that they're having some urinary leakage or some other symptoms of pelvic floor dysfunction. So it really kind of piqued my curiosity about what's happening at that time in a person's life. And we had a woman, a well-known physical therapist out of Canada. Her name is Diane Lee. She came to our clinic here at Fox Point probably a year or two after I started treating, and she really touched on that. She was just like answering all of my questions that I had burning in my head, and she really kind of brought that all together, that yes, there is a dysfunction that exists, that pelvic floor and hip and spine, they can be all related, and treating all of them together can be really helpful for people. So that's when I went into pelvic floor.
Is pelvic health dysfunction or pelvic health therapy, is it a relatively new concept of treating?
Mm-hmm.
Or has it been around, you know, kind of the dawn of time since physical therapy?
You know, it has, but it's really gaining momentum, especially in the last 10 years. So I started, if I remember correctly, I think I went through my first training in 2006 or 2007. I'm not totally sure on that. Don't quote me. But it was back in the early 2000s, and shortly after I graduated. And you could find classes out there. They were readily available, but now they're everywhere. And back then, after I went through my training, it was about a year and a half that it took to go through the coursework. And there's a paper you write, and you do a case presentation, and a lot of like skills are checked off. Once I graduated from that, we basically had to, you know, knock on doctors' doors and educate them about how pelvic floor can potentially help their patients. And now it is just very mainstream. Doctors are referring for it all the time. So it's been around for a while, but now it is everywhere.
And I feel like too, just based on the caseload we have here and the therapist that we have treating it, it has definitely grown since I've gotten here in the past 2.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's very widely needed.
Yes.
And maybe even undertreated still in a sense of like providers that seem to be out there.
Yes, I would agree with that. You know, now it's kind of exploded to the sense that I can't even open up my Instagram without seeing little videos and tips on how to improve your pelvic floor, which is just amazing. I mean, they're just taking the stigma away from it, and people are talking about it. And, you know, back when I was referring to the women that kind of got me interested in pelvic floor therapy, it was, you know, something that after several sessions of feeling comfortable with me, would they even let me know that they had a symptom? And now it's discussed pretty easily. So it's great.
Well, I even noticed on even some of the questionnaires that mm-hmm. come through, even for evaluations for me, I mean, there's a lot of questions that even as a therapist, not knowing any of that stuff, mm-hmm. something like I'd never asked that, but it's all good information that I think you've probably put together too at the front desk of have the patient answer these. Let's just get right into it right away and just to see what's going on.
And people are more comfortable talking about it, right? They'll feel fine bringing it up to you or mark that on their little check boxes that yes, I have bowel and bladder problems, you know, whereas in the past that maybe they would just leave it blank. So
what are some of the certifications that you have? Because I know you have mm-hmm. you have two credentialing letters too, don't you?
So when I went through my programming, it was through the APTA.
Okay.
So it's called an APTA CAP, Certificate of Achievement in Pelvic Physical Therapy. So that is what credentialed me. And then I went on to receive my biofeedback board certification in pelvic muscle dysfunction. And that was coursework and testing. Maybe we did some case studies. Yes, we did some case studies in there too, on how to use biofeedback, which is an excellent tool that can be used to evaluate pelvic floor muscle function. So I'm board certified in that.
Do you have to take a test for that?
Yes.
Once you take it, once you have it, or do you have to keep?
No, it is one of those that I believe it's every 5 years now I have to reapply, and I have to, I don't have to take another test. I don't believe, I can't remember. But we have a certain number of continuing education units that can be applied to that. So we have to kind of keep up with our credentials.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, is there anything that you feel like you're missing? Like
education.
I guess that's a bad way to ask it, but is there, I mean, more out there that you're looking to?
Oh my gosh, there is so much. There's a lot out there, you know, and it's tricky to keep up on everything, yeah. You know. I mean, when you're talking about pelvic health, you're talking about women with issues around pregnancy and postpartum. That's probably what people think of mostly. We're also talking about pelvic organ prolapse, and we're talking about pessary management. We're talking about constipation and bowel health. We're talking about, for men, prostate health and erectile dysfunction. There's also a facet for children in pelvic floor. I do not have training in that. I am interested in helping children. At this time, I feel like I have enough.
Oh,
maybe
God,
not yeah. enough time to help as much, but that's another area that, you know, maybe we can get somebody here at Freedom helping children yeah. with.
And I know we've kind of hinted at it so far, mm-hmm. But let's even back up even farther. What mm-hmm. is pelvic health physical mm-hmm. therapy?
So pelvic health is really what we're talking about is the group of muscles called the pelvic floor, and they run from your pubic bone to your tailbone. So they are basically the muscles that work to keep you dry so you don't leak urine, keep gas in, keep stool in. They also have to work in order to let things pass. Like, we need them to open and release and stretch so you can have a good bowel movement, a normal bowel movement. We need them to be able to move around without pain so you don't have pelvic pain and tailbone pain. We also, for men, need them to function, and women too, for sexual function, right? So erectile dysfunction is very much linked to pelvic floor muscle function. The ability to orgasm for a female is linked to pelvic floor muscle function. So it's your sexual health, it's your bowel health, it's your bladder health, and that can be affected by how strong, how flexible, how pain-free that group of muscles is.
Is there a specific demographic of patients that typically that you see, or even just in general, that can suffer from potential, you know, pelvic floor dysfunction, both male or female?
Anybody, you know, anybody can, both male and female. So, you know, pelvic pain is prevalent in both male and females, any age range, you know, that can even come from something as, you know, a childhood fall on their tailbone, and maybe it kind of laid dormant for a little while. And then for whatever reason, changing in collagen, changing in movement strategies, now it's become a pelvic pain dysfunction. So really nobody is, you know, exempt from yeah. having a pelvic floor muscle problem.
Here at Freedom, and I know Nina will never say this, but I see things from afar, and I don't treat pelvic floor, but Nina is kind of our
Yet.
Leader of of pelvic floor. Yes, that's in the future potentially. But Nina's kind of in charge of our pelvic floor department, I guess you would say, here at Freedom.
I don't know if I'm in charge, but I like to help mentor. So we just finished a mentoring meeting,
which Nina's very good at. I don't think I've ever heard her say anything negative about anybody, now that I say that. But Nina, like, even just here at Fox Point, or what you see, you know, just kind of mentoring other therapists here, what is like the number one, you know, pelvic health presentation that we see or we treat?
Mm-hmm. I would say still incontinence is pretty huge.
Okay.
You know, so I think the numbers are that if you have a vaginal delivery, you're 50% likely to have some sort of incontinence as a result of that. So that's a big one, you know. And then as time goes on, certainly if there was any sort of traumatic birth or a lot of pushing or vacuum assistance, then you can be, you know, potentially have some pelvic organ prolapse. That's another biggie. But now I'm seeing more and more bowel disorders where Constipation is a big one. The inability to release and stretch your pelvic floor relating to your being able to move your bowels effectively is something I'm seeing a ton of too.
Do you see a lot of crossover then too? I mean, you mentioned at the beginning, there's a lot of overlap with sexual health too. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see a lot of postpartum, we'll say for instance, that also as you start talking like, oh yeah, I definitely, you know, I have a problem with my sexual health as well.
Absolutely. So, after baby for sure, postpartum, another big time for, some changes in sexual health are the menopausal time. So as estrogen decreases, we can see some changes to the pelvic floor, to the bladder, the urethra that can impact not only incontinence, but sexual health.
Okay. Now with postpartum, I feel like this can be a loaded question too. Do you feel like that's something that's undertreated in the medical field itself, especially, I mean, at least in my experience, and I know you have two boys too, but I was kind of shocked, and maybe I look at this more because I'm a physical therapist and understand what goes on. But like once we had I didn't do anything, my wife did, had her C-section with our baby. It was just like, here's your baby. Are you doing okay?
Right.
Are you breastfeeding okay? Yeah, that's fine. Okay. But like, you're feeling fine. You can leave.
Exactly.
There's really no.
Yeah.
Really anything.
I know. You know, I think we've got a ways to go. We've come a long ways from when I started, for sure. You know, it was not something that postpartum women were given or even mentioned to them at all. You know, people are then 10 years post who I was seeing, which piqued my interest that, oh yeah, I probably should have done something about my pelvic floor 10 years ago, but nobody ever mentioned it to me.
Yeah.
Well, it is definitely improved now. I mean, postpartum women are just getting savvy and they are talking to their friends and they're, you know, a lot of times their physicians are telling them to come in. It certainly depends on the physician. But we're seeing a ton more postpartum women than we did 15 years ago. But I still think we've got a ways to go. So in some of the European countries, you were just given a script for pelvic floor PT right after you have the baby, which makes perfect sense, right? So I kind of look at it as that muscle group went through some major trauma during the vaginal delivery. And even cesarean section, you know, there was a tremendous load on the pelvic floor during pregnancy, and then you have an abdominal wound that you're healing. So, you know, it was just like any other injury, right? An ankle sprain, knee surgery, it's just automatic. And I think we'll get there. I think we're on the way there, but we're not quite there yet.
I feel like it. I was just talking this about this with a patient last week. I feel like it's one of those things, like as a society, and this is even just medicine. I think everyone applies to this. I'd be curious what you think. It's kind of just this understood societal thing that you're supposed to get married, have children, raise your family. And then it's kind of the cycle that people do it so much that we just kind of normalize like, oh, it's just a part of life. Like whatever happens is just a part of it. You have to deal with it.
Yes.
Or again, maybe I look at it now differently as a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, no, there's a reason that you're having this issue is because.
Right. Yeah, that's a great message. And that's something that when I do these community talks through the rec department, I really try to establish to the patients there. And a lot of times it's patients they're not patients. They're just coming in to listen to the talk. But they are retired and they're noticing some changes in their body as they're aging. And, you know, every once in a while, somebody will make a comment. Well, that's just kind of normal. Everybody has this as they age. Well, it's not a normal piece of aging. It's just very common. So I think you're exactly right. You know, some people are just normalizing it because it is so common, but that doesn't mean that you can't treat it and improve it and reverse it from being a big impact on your life.
Do you get that response a lot from patients too? They're like, oh, my doctor referred me to come to physical therapy. I had no idea you could help me.
Right. Yeah. You know, definitely. And, I see that quite often that if somebody's coming in for their back or their hip too, and, I didn't know that this could be related, or I didn't know that this was something that I should spend time treating. So yeah, for sure.
Now, is there any presentation that other people see at Freedom that you don't, or is everyone kind of, because is every other therapist gone through the Herman and Wallace course?
I think.
Or you have too, right? or no?
I've taken some Herman Wallace courses, but when I went through my program, it was through the APTA.
Meaning too, what I was going to ask after that is like there are different ways to go about treating it, or is overall it's kind of the same?
Right. So, you know, what's really kind of cool is that some of the therapists that were training on pelvic floor dysfunction come to this point where they already have a really solid set of orthopedic skills, which I think is such an asset, that we all have a little bit different spin. And that's really what's been kind of great about doing, we do these mentoring roundtables every other week. And we all just throw in what we would do with a patient and as we kind of talk through cases. And we all learn from each other. So it's great. We all have a different skill set. And I think we can complement each other really well.
That's what it seems like for me, you know, mm-hmm. listening is, in one, I think there's so much more information about pelvic floor than mm-hmm. I would have even thought. I mean, you seem to give so much out to patients, whether mm-hmm. it's like a bladder log or just looking at different things. I mean, there's so much that goes into it. Not that I thought it was just do this and that and the patient's fine, but there's so much that goes into it on top of doing other things.
It is so true. And, you know, I think that's so great that you're doing that. And I've been doing the lecture for pelvic health for UWM for the last several years. And that's always something that we talk about is, you know, this is not something that just exists on its own island, this pelvic floor dysfunction. It is part of, and it can be contributing to the patient you're seeing for, you know, their neck pain or for their shoulder dysfunction. It's part of the whole person, you know? So ortho and pelvic floor are very much, you know, complementary to each other. And so the more that we can get the word out there that, yes, you can talk to your patient about I'm seeing some signs that maybe you have a pelvic floor dysfunction. As you know, maybe you should talk to somebody who does this. So that's great.
Awesome. I feel like there's so much overlap, and I mean, we've talked. You're pushing me to take the male pelvic health class, which I think is coming soon.
It should be, because you know, Joe is an amazing therapist, and we just need more men that men can see. You know, that is something that I see a fair amount of men. And I really enjoy working with them and they enjoy working with me. But I think it would be so nice to be able to have a male option for them.
I only know of a couple off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even know them. I just know that we've talked about them before.
There's just a couple.
Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. For like not knowing anything, mm-hmm. I see more overlap with pelvic floor, even with men which goes back to what I said earlier, is some of the questions on the sheet that you give out mm-hmm. that come through our evals, like I would never ask. I had a patient that had back pain. Severe back pain. Well, he hadn't peed in over a day.
Oh.
Kidney infection.
Oh.
A bladder infection.
Oh, dear.
So, I mean, it goes hand in hand that I just started asking questions and it came out that, I haven't peed in over a day.
Oh, well, you're an awesome therapist.
Well, it's not your back.
Great that you did that.
Yeah. We got him on a diuretic and he was fine. But that being said, I mean, kind of going back to PT school, and this isn't a knock on PT school. I've talked about this before. I just think there's not enough time to get all this in.
Right.
But what do people get, 20 minutes?
Right.
Like our ortho, our last semester, it was the first time they'd done it, where they just brought in guest lectures and you spent a day we had one on pelvic health, one on running. I mean, it's just different things, but that's not enough to... You just kind of know, like,
if just this comes a little through, bit, right? And maybe
same
enough
thing with
to pique your interest, but then you've got to go on for some further schooling.
Nina, tell us a little bit, for any listener that potentially... thinks that they may have pelvic floor dysfunction, or they're kind of on the fence of, I feel like I'm having some symptoms, but I don't know where to go. What are some things that patients should, you know, kind of be on the lookout for, or signs and symptoms that they may notice in their habits? And I know that can be applied to a lot of different presentations, but I'll let you decide what you see the most.
So some biggies, well, the obvious would be any sort of leakage when you don't want something to be coming out of your urethra or your anal canal. So urinary leakage, fecal leakage, and that could be even just some little, what we call fecal smearing. So if you, you know, are changing at the end of the day and you notice noticed some kind of some marks of stool on your underwear. That could be a sign of some pelvic floor dysfunction and constipation, actually. If you're leaking gas, so I don't know if you've ever been in a class where you're taking an exercise class and you have to get on and off the floor and somebody in the room is getting up off of the floor and they leak a bunch of gas. That's another sign of pelvic floor dysfunction where you have trouble controlling that. If you have any of your internal organs coming outward, so that's called prolapse. So that could be coming out from the vaginal canal or the rectal canal. So if there's heaviness down there or pressure or you feel something like a ball coming out, that would be another indication that pelvic floor therapy could be helpful to you. If you have pain in the area of between your pubic bone and your tailbone, or on your tailbone, or in between your two sit bones, anything that would basically touch a bicycle seat when you're sitting. If you have pain there, that would be certainly something to warrant a referral. Pain with intercourse would be warranted, or any sort of erectile dysfunction or orgasm dysfunction. If we're dealing with constipation, so constipation being that you're passing, you have to work really hard to pass stool, even if you're going every day and it's you're working hard to pass it, or you've got like pebble-like stool, or if you're skipping some days, or even if you're going frequently and having some diarrhea, those could be all signs of constipation that pelvic floor therapy could be helpful with. Back pain, especially if you notice that your back pain is somewhat related to having a bowel movement, that if you have a bowel movement, things feel better. Sometimes hip pain can be a part of the pelvic floor dysfunction. And then even if you have neck pain or jaw pain, that has been correlated with high tone pelvic floor. So if you have some sort of neck or jaw pain that you've done more of the traditional things for and it hasn't helped, and you have any of those other symptoms, then maybe somebody should look at the pelvic floor.
Heather was telling me about that too, that she notices a lot of that with her PRI treatment too.
Yes, right.
Because she treats a lot of jaw as well, that mm-hmm. there's a huge mm-hmm. connection between the two, which I think is, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, in PT school, they're like, and in general, treat the whole body, but I mean, right. It's kind of fascinating to me.
Absolutely, yep. And so, you know, I think they share fascial connections from the pelvic floor up to some of the musculature of the posterior neck and jaw, as well as they're really big areas that we can hold muscle tension, right? So just as often as we're holding tension in our jaw, which can create pain and dysfunction in the TM joint, we can also be holding pelvic floor tension, lifting at the pelvic floor, you know, holding tone in our rectal area or urethral area, that could be affecting the function of your bowel and bladder.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's just so in depth.
It is. Yeah.
Of just in general. What would you say is probably the biggest question that patients ask you?
You know, I guess when I have a new patient, they really want to know what to expect. A lot of times patients will call and what does a treatment look like? What does an assessment look like? And some patients really do not want to have an internal exam where we're looking in the vaginal canal or the rectal canal. And we definitely work with that. So I always explain that if your physician is referring you for pelvic floor dysfunction, they are probably expecting that we'll do a pelvic floor exam, and that's how we're going to get the most amount of information. But if you're not okay with that, there are other ways that I can get some of the information so we can at least start you on something. And maybe it just takes a little bit of time until they get to know me, or they, you know, get to see the clinic and, yeah. and feel safe and comfortable with that. And sometimes we don't even need to do an internal exam. You know, we can find out the information with external palpation and get them started on some really nice exercises for recovery. So I get that a lot. I also get, let's see, well, we kind of talked about that. If leakage is normal, right? So if that's normal, but no, it's really not normal. It's just really common. I also get asked a lot about Kegels. And so Kegels.
That's the only thing I remember from our talk in PT school is how to do it.
Okay, got it. All right. So, well, recently Kegels have been totally demonized. So I think what happened was, all right, so when pelvic floor started, or pelvic floor physical therapy, or awareness about the pelvic floor kind of came about, Kegels were really overprescribed. So you had a problem, no matter what was going on, you were given Kegels. Well, that is not the best practice. Okay. So we need to strengthen a muscle that is weak. Maybe the muscle is too tight or has too much tone or there's pain there and you're giving your patient some, Kegels and it's just making them worse. Okay. So, so they kind of got demonized, and I think also, they, you know, a lot of, maybe sometimes they were overused. So the only thing that you'd come in and do if we determined that the muscle was weak was just a Kegel. And that's all you need to learn how to do, and then you're going to be better. Well, again, that's not always best practice because we need to be able to make sure that pelvic floor is functioning for the activity that a person is doing. So if we're just having you lay on your back and do Kegel after Kegel, and you need to be able to have good pelvic muscle function for running, that's probably not going to best serve you. So I think then it kind of got demonized that, oh, we should, if you're doing Kegels, or if your pelvic floor therapist tells you to do a Kegel, you should run. You should not be doing that. Well, it's totally appropriate for the right person. But is it the end all be all? No, there's a lot more that we need to progress you through and get your hips going, get your posture and your alignment as part of that too. So Kegels are not bad. That's the answer to that question. I get asked that a lot.
I feel like that's also becoming medicine in general because, I mean, with the internet and social media, you can find anything anywhere and everyone is trying to just mainstream everything. And I've gotten to the point now where I've just started telling patients this is you're going to go online and you're going to see that, and for this example, that I have pelvic floor dysfunction. I haven't seen anybody, but if you do this Kegel, it'll take care of your problem. Right. Or if you have back pain, just do this squat and this will take care of your problem.
Right.
It doesn't work like that.
It doesn't. Everybody's looking for a magic bullet, right? It's just easier.
That's exactly how I say it.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of frustrating at this point, but there's so much out there that everyone is looking for just that.
That quick fix.
The quick fix, and it's not the case, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of work to get better. It's a lot of work to spend time either relaxing, releasing, strengthening, stretching, you know. But then you get to the point where it becomes, you know, part of you, and you can then get on a maintenance program.
Yeah.
And you're only doing these things once or twice a week. But you know, if you don't use it, you lose it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So let's keep people active.
And I feel like we've talked a lot about kind of the postpartum a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of patients that are in the middle of pregnancy and like before pregnancy, I guess, like the beginning stages? Or, I mean, are there things also that, you know, patients can do or, you know, physical therapy would help, you know, make the rest of pregnancy helpful?
Yes, definitely. So lots of aches and pains pop up during pregnancy. So back pain, neck pain, hip pain, those are really common ones. And, you know, abdominal pain, that can be part of it too. So we work a lot with pregnant women. Also, we can start to have incontinence during that time too. So getting people on a really good program can be helpful at that time.
Do you see a lot of patients in that time frame too?
In pregnancy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Do you get a lot of referrals during that time too? Because I feel like too, it kind of goes back to what we said earlier, is a lot of it, or what you said with some of the people that come to your class, it's like, oh, I just thought that was normal.
Right.
Like, I feel like some of this stuff, it's probably hard for people, and even doctors maybe even, to be like, oh, no, that's... That's not just a part of this.
I, you know, I would actually say that probably, you know, if you think about when you're going through pregnancy, you are seeing your physician every 4 weeks, every 2 weeks, every week, you know, so you have a lot more time to bring up these concerns. So I've been seeing that, you know, if a patient brings that up, they're getting referred in, you know. I think the issue with postpartum is that you really only see your physician 6 weeks after, and that is it, you know, and maybe you're having these symptoms that are really becoming pesky at week 12, but you're not regularly seeing your physician, right? You're now on to seeing the pediatrician who you're not talking to. So I think they're a little bit more referring in for pregnancy, probably just as a result of how frequently they're seeing their physician.
Mm-hmm. What do you think needs to change?
Oh gosh. You know, I mean, I love the model of why not refer everybody to some good pelvic floor or physical therapy right after you have a baby. I just think it should be normal. And maybe, you know, I say, well, maybe you're part of that 50% of people that really don't have any problem with their pelvic floor, but there's probably something else that is bothering you, that your body is going through such major changes. And why not help that mom with a little bit of self-care? And we can also be helpful in screening if maybe there's a little postpartum depression going on. You know, it is just so focused on the new baby and getting back to work a lot of times. And so I think that is, and again, I think we are moving that direction for sure compared to 15 years ago. We are really, you know, moving towards that. But I think we could probably do a little bit better. And why not? You know, even if somebody just came in for one visit and we show them a few things that they can do at home to help address their ailments would be great.
I feel like that's something that, well, I guess before I say this, if someone just comes in and they need authorization post-pregnancy, have you noticed issues with denial?
No.
If there's like a, if you're just doing kind of a screen?
You know, I don't know if I've had where I'm just doing a screen.
Or not even a screen. Someone just comes in like, I just had a baby. Can we just make sure that everything's, you know, fine?
It
have you ever had?
It just depends on their insurance. I mean, I rarely see denials, to be honest. It depends on your insurance if we need to get your physician involved or not.
You know?
So you could come in and, you know, I've heard about physical therapy and I feel like I have some problems I'd like to get taken care of.
Yeah.
And if your insurance doesn't need a physician referral, then we just get going and there's no problem.
Because I feel like in general, I mean, that would save A, the patient's money, B, the insurance money.
Right.
Just take care of things right away or go through, you know. I mean, even in my experience, I mean, again, I didn't do anything. I just supported my wife. But having a C-section and just seeing all that and seeing it firsthand, I think it really opens your eyes up at how much the body changes with pregnancy and, quite honestly, how dangerous it actually still is, even in the modern world.
Right.
I mean, there's so much that I'm surprised more doesn't go wrong. And not with the baby or with the wife, but just like changes in general.
Right.
Or like moms after, I mean, I've even seen patients still like, oh, I can't do this still after pregnancy and I had kids 25 years ago.
Right.
Like, well, actually, we can do something.
Right.
It's just crazy to me.
It is crazy, isn't it? Well, you can be part of that change too.
We'll see. Nina, is there anything other tips or tricks, so to speak, that you would give potential patients or patients that are just looking for more information on pelvic health in general?
Mm-hmm. Well,
or guidelines to live by, so to speak, too?
Yeah. You know, I always say, you know, when I'm giving these community talks that, okay, I just listed, you know, a few minutes ago, a lot of the symptoms of pelvic floor dysfunction. Well, there could also be a lot of medical reasons that you could be dealing with some bladder changes or bowel changes. So just if you haven't brought it up to your physician, just go ahead and do so. And if they feel that there are any red flags, they may want to do a little bit of blood work or look a little bit further. But, you know, just talk to your physician about these things. I still find that people haven't talked to their physicians about bowel and bladder problems. And they come in and see me and I'll say, well, have you ever mentioned this to your doctor? No. You know, they're talking about other things. So so that would be a big message that I have is just let's start talking about it and talk about it with your physician. That's what they're there for. If you've noticed some acute changes in your bowel or bladder dysfunction, function, then let's bring it up. I've seen patients who have come in that, you know, are certain that they have pelvic floor dysfunction and they've had a urinary tract infection for months, you know, and those can be really dangerous. So, that would be something that is so easily screened out. It's just urinate into a specimen cup and they can determine if you need some sort of treatment for that.
Do you think there still is kind of a stigma to kind of talk about that stuff with, or not even stigma, I guess a stigma with your primary? Like, oh, I'm just not going to bring it up.
I think it kind of comes down to people thinking it's normal as they age. You know, I'm kind of thinking about more of my patients that are a little bit older and have some bowel and bladder changes, and they just have not discussed it with their physician, assuming it's normal.
I feel like, and we've talked about this, I mean, it's kind of personal, I guess. My experience talking with doctors, because if I have to go to the bathroom, it's now. Is they kind of just like, oh, you're 24, 25, 26, like, that's just stop drinking as much water. It's like, that's not the, that's not the case. So I think sometimes too, it's just kind of off-putting too. I feel like that people wouldn't then.
If you're dismissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, I mean, that's in general too. That's not just pelvic health, but I feel like we do, and this is as a health profession, I think as a whole, sometimes we're dismissive when we're like, oh, there's no way a two and two could be together versus just like, oh, just go see someone.
Right. Right.
Which I feel like happens to a lot of people.
I'm sure it does.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, sadly.
Now, do you have a certain demographic of patients that you see? Or is it seems like it's wide ranging.
It's pretty wide range, and I love that. You know, I see pregnancy, postpartum. I see a lot of diastasis recti. We didn't really talk about that. That can be, it's not necessarily part of pelvic floor dysfunction, but can be related. Something that happens during pregnancy where your abdominal muscles split apart to accommodate the growing fetus. And then we would expect those muscles to come back together, that linea alba, the connective tissue between the muscles, to come back together. And sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then we have potentially some aches and pains in our back. We're not having the stability in the abdominal wall that we should. So I see a lot of that. And I love to treat that with some very you know, kind of specific exercises evolving to the Pilates method. So once, you know, I establish some good stability, control with some kind of little bit smaller, gentler exercises, then we progress that to Pilates, and it's amazing what that can do for diastasis. And then I see men, I see post-prostatectomy, I see men with erectile dysfunction, enlarged prostate, urinary urgency and frequency, constipation. And then I see elderly women quite often that are seeing a lot of changes as their body you know, ages, and how that's affecting their bowel and bladder. So kind of a little bit of everything, and I love that.
I feel like for me personally, the diastasis recti, like in PT school, when you learn about this stuff, it's like, all right, this is what you're going to see when it happens, but it's all hypothetical. You know, you're starting your palpation stuff. You might have a classmate that's got, you know, a torn meniscus, so they may have a positive McMurray test, or maybe they had a torn ACL, so they may have a slightly positive Lachman test. But seeing the diastasis recti in person with patients, I think, is one of the craziest presentations when you actually see it. Like, no, this is what it looks like. It's it's crazy what how it presents.
Right. And what it looks like is it's a separation of the abdominal wall. So where you'll really see it is you may notice that the skin tissue itself and the connective tissue really get stretched, and it looks almost like crepe paper. That can be where there's a lot of connective tissue disruption. Or it can even look like if they don't know how to stabilize correctly or need some strengthening, when you do something like a sit-up or a crunch or lift your head up, it's a big dome that kind of pushes up right through the center of the abdomen, and that's because of a loss of that stability.
Even just the head lift sometimes just
pops it right up.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something you kind of touched on in erectile dysfunction, I feel like is very common with people. I feel like everything you hear about or you see as is just take this pill and you'll be fine. Is that something that physical therapy can actually help people a lot more than is advertised as well.
Yeah. And it's, that's one of those that there is a lot of different reasons somebody could be experiencing erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
But you need to have really good pelvic floor health in order to maintain erection. So if you have any weakness of the pelvic floor or potentially restricted muscles that are painful to contract, that could keep you from being able to maintain an erection. So there could also be some changes at the prostate and maybe some tissue tension or scar tissue that can be helped with some of the pelvic floor and visceral techniques that we do. So yes, it definitely could be related to the pelvic floor. I always encourage, if you have changes in your erectile function, you got to talk to your doctor. There are a lot of medical reasons that, yeah, that could be, you know, that need to be ruled out. And if those all come back clear, then let's do some pelvic therapy.
Do you see a lot of crossover too with other presentations with pelvic floor therapy? Like, I mean, obviously we see it with, I should say we work at the same place, but mm-hmm. you don't do as much orthopedic mm-hmm. anymore just because your schedule is more full with pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's crossover drugs, like, okay, you're taking this, mm-hmm. this is your symptom, but I feel like pelvic floor, like, there's so much crossover with the referral from the doctor. Is there not? Meaning, like, patients are on X, Y, and Z drug and now they're having this symptom. I feel like there right. has to be constant communication yes. back and forth.
Constant. And, you know, so a lot of times what we'll see is, and this is not quite as common now, but this was a big problem 10, 15 years ago. There was a class of drugs, the anticholinergics and antimuscarinics, that were being prescribed all the time for bladder urgency. And one of their big, they had a ton of side effects, and really they're not used much anymore at all. But one of the big side effects was constipation. And constipation can actually make your urgency and frequency worse. So it was like a catch 22. So it's, yeah. And I'm always looking at a medication list to see what are the side effects. What are, is that a diuretic? Should you maybe talk to your physician about taking that at a different time of day? Sometimes patients are taking, without knowing, medications in the evening that are diuretics, and they're waking up several times a night to urinate. So talking to their physician about a different time of day can be really helpful.
Nina, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you wanted to talk about?
Let's see. You know, the only other thing I would say is that, you know, when we were kind of talking about frequently asked questions and that, I just wanted to bring up that a lot of times patients are really floored that they are actually constipated and they don't feel like they have any problems with their bowels. So, you know, that could be a big issue when relating to back pain, hip pain, bladder dysfunction. So if you're moving harder stools, if they're harder to pass, even if you're going every day and multiple times a day, if you have any questions, talk to your physician. They can easily do an x-ray to see if there is stool impacted up into the colon, because so many times patients don't believe they're constipated and they do have some backup that are relating to so many problems for them. So
post-pregnancy, obviously pregnancy, you're seeing your OB, which is probably where a lot of referrals are coming from. Mm-hmm. Post-pregnancy, are you getting most of your referrals just from primary doctors?
A little bit of everything. So for sure, primary, and then also OBGYN, you know, so maybe they'll, it won't be in, regular visits anymore, but they'll call and say, I'm still having this issue, and okay. the OBGYN will refer.
Okay.
Or even just, you know, word of mouth. You know, I get a lot of word of mouth.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, Nina, I assume outside of work that you don't just sit at home and look through research studies of physical therapy. Outside of being a physical therapist, what are some of the hobbies you like to do? I know you're a mom of two young boys, so
right.
well, I'm sure that takes up a lot of time.
I know. And that's my pride and joy right there, the family. So they are very into basketball and baseball, so I feel like I am a forever bleacher butt. You know, I'm always watching them on the sidelines. But no, I love to be active outside, and I like to get out hiking with the family, and just spending time outdoors is really where my passion lies. So I like to cook. I'm not so much a baker, but love to cook. So
now with the boys, you got them a cool Christmas gift with
Dwayne Wade signed jerseys.
And now I haven't even talked to you about this because I just saw it not too long ago. that those become even bigger now that he bought the new practice facility for the basketball team or something.
I know. He made a huge donation. And okay, a little more history. I went to school at Marquette in 2003. I was a senior when they went to the Final Four. We were in the glory days. Okay. So I love Dwayne Wade and all those guys. So,
Your age.
Yes. Yeah. I think he might be a year or two younger than me. So, what was your question about? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just saying that their jerseys become even bigger now.
Oh, and the donation.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I guess it's not very common for, if you go and play in the NBA to give back to the school you went to. And I did not realize that. So this is really a big deal that he made such a generous donation. He donated $3 million. And I think it's split up into different facets. And part of that is going towards a new practice facility for the team.
Where are they putting it? Do you know?
I have no clue because I cannot imagine where else they can jam another building on that campus. But
I think it's cool.
Amazing. Yeah.
I think it's crazy. I mean, people can do whatever they want with their money. I'm not here to judge, but you have so much on the side. You're just like, I'll just give it back.
Right.
Like, you guys enjoy it.
Yeah. And he seems like he's a type of guy that definitely appreciates, all the breaks that he's had and in that sort of thing.
And you guys like to go, you guys are season ticket holders to Marquette, right?
Yep. We love it. Kids love it. And my kids are finally at an age we've been season ticket holders for all of our life. And my husband is like super into it. So we'll always be season ticket holders. But when the kids were really little, 1 and 3 and 2 and 4, and nobody ever wanted to sit. And I felt like I was just walking them around the Bradley Center. Why do we even go here? But now they're at an age where they can sit down. We all enjoy it. We just love it. We love to follow them around. We're hoping to get out to New York this year to see them.
You guys went last year, right?
Went last year when they won the Big East Conference Tournament. So, so we're hoping to be there this year too.
I feel like that's the one thing, among others, going to Marquette. I mean, they really don't have, there's not a football team. Yes. So it's like,
you're all in on basketball.
Basketball is not, talking bad about any other sports or anything, but right. Basketball is the sport there.
Yeah. It's so much fun. I mean, our whole weekends were planned around those Marquette games. So basketball games.
And the boys like it now too.
Oh, they just love it.
So did you guys have to get 2 more season tickets then?
Yeah, we did. So the price went up there a little bit, but
doubled it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's Nina, I always like to finish podcasts with one question because I think our personal lives really overlap with our professional lives because, we're dealing with people on a daily basis. What motivates you to be a better person or physical therapist?
Oh, gosh. I say that I'm like blessed and cursed with a very curious mind. So if I see something that I don't know the answer to, I want to figure that out so I can help more people. So I think curiosity for sure is a big one for me. I want to know the why behind everything and be able to help future patients if I can't figure it out for that one. And really, it's the best field. It is so rewarding. I leave every day and people are grateful and I'm grateful for them. And so my patients are true motivators. I love it.
I feel like we're lucky here at Freedom, especially too, because we get so much one-on-one time. So we get to know people a little more too. Uh-huh. So once we see them improve or not that we don't go above and beyond for everybody, but some patients, it takes a lot more research and just really figuring out what's going on. So to see them.
But that's the cool part. That's what I love, and thinking about, and then I always go back, 10 years ago, I had that same question and I wish I would have known this research now. And not that it's all about the research either. I mean, the research is great and it gives us some, like a little template and idea, but it's really learning from patients and patients' experiences and that is so helpful too.
Any other thoughts before we wrap up, Nina?
No, just that this is the best place and the best patients and I love it. So,
Lord, thank you for sitting down with us and we're happy to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Joe.
If anybody has any questions or would like to see Nina or one of our other pelvic floor specialists, I believe we have a therapist at every location now, right?
We do.
Muguanago, Brookfield, Grafton, and obviously Fox Point. If anybody has any questions or has any thoughts to share on a future podcast, please let us know. Otherwise, we'll see everybody in the next episode. Thanks, Nina.
Thank you.